7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 26 of Color of Magic. As usual, I am your host, Daquan Watson, and I always have my buddy riding shotgun, Brian. How's it going, man?
What's good? We are still here in, still here in Dallas County. Everybody is still safe and healthy in our house. It is.
Yeah, you say that, but that's actually a real thing. We got to check in with everybody to make sure everyone's making it right now. And surprisingly, we're actually doing really well here in Washington, so
that's
no major complaints at the moment. But what have you been doing to keep yourself busy during this time while we're all kind of cooped up at our house, man?
Oh, man. I've been doing a lot of content, obviously, a lot of streaming, just, you know, playing some video games and board games with the kiddos. You know, I've been trying.
I try
to stay away from news, but as a former reporter, sometimes you just gotta, hey, what happened to so-and-so? You know, it was...
I can't say I blame you. I mean, old habits die hard. But yeah, I think it's interesting because a lot of people right now, especially in the content creation world, are just trying to find ways to create content. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, like myself, I've been putting content out practically every day. But there's some people who were recording their content either in a studio or with two or three people. And it's hard for them to still produce content. I've seen that with other like YouTube personalities where their stuff's pretty much fallen off, or where they'd go like three videos a week, they're doing like one a week now because they're just so hamstrung from what they used to do. You know, because like imagine if you're one of those people that used to go out to like you do restaurant reviews.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, you can't go out and review restaurants, right? And I told people before, you know, even on my streams, which I've been streaming more than my 3 days a week now since I've been home. But it's interesting because I have a lot of other hobbies, right? I have multiple things I can work on, multiple things I can talk about. I can put stuff up on YouTube. I'm doing the streaming thing. So I'm not really noticing. I'm just creating more content. The interesting thing, though, is at what point do you saturate the content you put out? Like, because obviously there's more consumers at home and more people are watching or listening, but how much is too much?
And that's what everybody has to figure out.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you find yourself watching or consuming more content right now?
I think if I'm interested in something, I'm still interested in it. You know, my favorite creators, like every time they upload to, especially if it's, you know, a different, like it's, for example, you know, just throw a football out there. If you found a play that you think works every time, yeah, okay, I'm in. I want to see this.
That's fair. I mean, I have to admit, I've been watching a lot of just random channels that I've just like, oh, this person's interesting. And I watched one of their videos before. Let me see what else they have. So, you know, 3 hours later, I've watched like 12 of their videos.
And then, of course, you know, we're all, I think at this point, it's content creator suckers for, hey, my numbers jumped up when I did this. Yeah, okay. Tell me more.
Sure. But, you know, it's also interesting, too, because right now, I like, and don't get me wrong, I'm super appreciative. I've gained probably, I think I'm averaging something like 1.5 subscribers a day or something here in the last 3 weeks, which is great. But I don't know if that's sustainable or not. I don't know if that's a real number. I don't know if like it's only happening because people are at home or because I'm putting more content out or I'm putting a different variety of content out. Like it's all very interesting.
And there's there's always, you know, ebbs and flows and spikes. And I mean, like Jack Frags, for example, is a huge content creator. And he says, okay, yeah, he gets something like probably a couple of million subscribers a year. But yeah, on the other side, he loses thousands of subscribers. And you just got to be willing to understand that that's the way the business works and not take it personal. It's just people, you know, you're not a human to them. You're a thing to watch. And you just got to kind of accept that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's probably part of it, right? Because it's, I won't say it's a dehumanizing experience, but they are coming to you because you are a entertainer. You are a information provider. You're an instructor or whatever it is that you're doing. And they don't know you on a personal level. It's once they've grown bored of you or you've met their need or maxed out their capacity, That's it.
It could be as simple as, you know, maybe you create content based on Magic the Gathering and they stop playing Magic. So they don't want to watch the videos anymore. It could be something that's nothing against you personally. They just quit playing the game or they're taking a break from the game.
That's fair. I mean, I could see that. When I was disc golfing more regularly, I watched more disc golfers. Now I just only subscribe to the main like dynamic disc channel and that's it. So that's totally fair. But anyway, let's get into some other fun stuff. What did you learn last week?
All right. As I mentioned last week, I was going to be play Predator Hunting Grounds and actually, you know, live the experience of being the Predator. And it was a lot of fun, I got to tell you.
Really?
They call it Predcore, where you're jumping through the trees, you know, from limb to limb with, of course, your cloaking device on. And you really, I mean, the main question the game had to answer is, do you feel like the Predator? And when it was going right, you really do. You are just a swarthy machine of death, jumping from the trees and murdering everything in sight.
And that's pretty cool. What's the goal in that game?
It's basically four versus one. Four people are soldiers. One person is the Predator. And if you're the Predator, of course, your goal is to wipe everybody out and pull their skull out of their face. And then if you're the fire team, you have a series of missions. Like maybe you got to stop a drug cartel from, selling cocaine or whatever. Or stop some Banana Republic dictator from taking over the world or something like that. And of course, while you're trying to do your mission, the Predator is stalking you.
Dude, that's weird. So it's like GTA meets PUBG meets Predator?
It kind of is like that. Because, you know, they had to give you some. First, I was like, why is there another faction? What's the point? But, of course, one of the ways the Predator tracks people is by gunfire. So if you don't have anybody else to shoot at, the Predator basically can't find you. So they had to give you somebody else to shoot at. Plus, you got to have a reason to be in South America running around with guns, you know. Because in theory, you don't know the Predator exists till he starts hunting you.
That's wild. That's an interesting way to kind of direct that game and the activity. I wouldn't have thought, like, when you first tell me, like, oh, there's going to be a new Predator game, whatever, I really wouldn't have considered that option as far as that setup. It's pretty sweet.
And there's a really, like, there's a wide variety of missions, too. I played the trail for 2 days, and I don't know that I did all the various missions they have. And, of course, that's just the demo, so I'm sure they'll have a bunch more when the actual game launches on April 24th, I believe. Again, they're not paying me for this, but, you know, if anybody, Predator Hunting Headquarters, wants to give me a shout out, hey.
That's cool. You know, I debated what I was going to talk about on what I learned this week, because, like I said, I've been consuming a lot of content, so I've learned quite a bit of stuff in the last week. But I think one of the things I want to talk about is for people. I guess if you were streaming or producing content in any way where you're going to be on screen, any type of recording or video, lighting is very important. I think, you know, especially if you're trying to make a brand out of yourself and want somebody to watch you regularly, lighting is a big deal. But lighting can also be expensive. So one of the things I want to talk about is some lights that I got. They're fairly cheap. I believe they're called Sea Life lights from GE. And they're cool because they're RGB lights you can control from your phone. You can set them to, I don't know, a pile of different colors. But one of the things I think people forget is having lighting in front of you from a couple of angles is actually important, because lighting behind you can make your face very dark, even more so if you're of the darker complected variety.
I was going to mention that.
So, I mean, and that's a real thing.
Yeah.
But here's the reason these individual lights are nice, because if you buy actual, like, different types of colored lights, tubing lights or whatever, they're really cool looking, but they tend to be very expensive. You have to spend a couple $100 to get a nice setup. These I bought for like $50, and I could set them up. We're basically, because they connect to like Google Home, Alexa, whatever. You just basically make a second fake room when you set them up, so you can have them on two different systems. Because if you put everything in one room, when you turn the lights on, it wants to turn on both of them. So what I did, if you watch my streams now, is I have one just set as a bright white light, kind of overhead three quarters of the way over, so it just shines on me. And then I have the other one that I could set to different colors in the background. So when you watch, I now have color and stuff in the background while still being well lit. And it was like a $50 option. Fair. Very cool. So if you want to spruce up your streams or make your videos nicer on a budget, those are things you can just order through Amazon. You can pick them up at Best Buy. And super, super, super nice. Makes a big difference. Matter of fact, on my latest card spotlight video, I started the video with just white lights all around. And then when I revealed what card it was and what color, I made the background the color to match the card.
Okay.
And it was simple. It was just like one push button. And again, it's something small, but it just added a little bit of flavor to the thing.
I didn't realize how much lighting, you know, that people of color need until I did a commercial for Brian Longcar, a lawyer I'm sure you're familiar with. We used to see his commercials all the time in Texas. And yeah, we're both kind of what we would like refer to as high yellow in the black community.
Yeah.
And they had six or eight lights beaming at me. Like, for real? Then, you know, I saw the behind the scenes. Yeah, I really do require that many lights. I had no idea until I did the TV commercial.
Yeah, and you know, and I record when I do. I have a ring light that's on my left. I have my newer Sea Life light in the pure white up on my opposite side. And then I have my room light turned off completely. Because that light coming from behind me just creates a dark shadow, effectively, that just isn't visually appealing on camera.
And then my wife has a darker skin color, so we got to have, you know, even more kind of to get us to where we're both visible in the same scene. So it's a process.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, I think it's one of those things. And when, like I said, when I went back through that 60-day thing and was looking at some of my notes, one of the biggest things is audio, making sure people can hear you, you're crisp, there's not a bunch of like hissing and static or whatever. The second is just having a consistent streaming camera so you can be seen and be on camera. But with that, I think the third most important is probably lighting. Seriously. Because if you just sound awful, people are just going to check out quick, right? We know that's a thing. But then after that, if you want them to hang around even longer, you have to be nice to look at. Otherwise, and I'm not saying you got to be pretty, because believe me, I'm not the nicest looking man in the world. I will gladly tell you that. But you have to just be there so like they can see your facial expressions clearly.
Exactly.
You know, even if it's just making your background look different with color or how you decorate it or whatever, it just makes you stand out and look a little bit different. So there's a visual appeal to having you on there.
Yeah, people really, I mean, we're in the reaction business. People want to see, like, oh, wow, they played that card. They did that play. You know, people want to see what your response is to that crazy thing that just happened on your stream or your video or whatever. Like, I auditioned for Comic View one time, and we didn't know it at the time, but Steve Harvey was actually in the club watching us audition badly. And as an example, he told one guy, like, just a simple thing, man. You're a comedian, and you got shades on stage in a dark nightclub. If I can't see you, I can't laugh at you.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's the thing, you know, the guy didn't think about when I saw the guy's act. I didn't realize that was one of the problems. But yeah, we're in the reaction business. We got your eyes is almost 90% of your facial expression.
Yeah, so there we go. We turned this into a podcast about streamer tips or video recording tips.
Or stand-up comedy tips, if you want to, but yeah.
Yeah, there you go. We're bringing all kinds of content this week. So yeah, let's talk about some other stuff.
We got to do what we got to do.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get to the business side, though. So with all the stuff going on, I think we touched on it very lightly last week. But Wizards of the Coast is actually doing some things to try to help out the game and hobby stores. Which I know there's a bunch of problems and hate over like the price of the fetch land secret lair stuff or whatever, but I think that kind of is overshadowing some of the good stuff that Wizards is trying to do right now. So I just kind of wanted to highlight a couple of things. You know, the first is that they're going to be making more mystery boosters from the next printing available to hobby stores. And the reason this is nice is they're not charging them for this. So this is a way that hobby stores can just make up some money that they would have otherwise lost during this time of being closed. Now, admittedly, it's not going to be a ton, but if they can get each store, let's say based on size, like 6 to 10 boxes or something, like the store could realistically make up to $1,000, $1,200 maybe, you know, and that's a big deal because depending on the size of your store, I mean, maybe not in the major Metroplex areas, but smaller places, that could be your rent or at least half your rent or something, you know, and make up for you being closed for a month.
Every bit helps.
Yep. They've also moved the dates of the Ikoria releases. So for those of you that didn't see it, they basically moved it back to mid-May. However, it's still going to release at the normal time in the APAC region. And this is drawing a little bit of frustration from people, you know, but the reality is there's just the way some stuff is printed and stuff that's nearby. And some of the countries are already starting to make a recovery and they're opening up their business lines and stuff. So like, because otherwise, like shipping would be a problem and everything else. So, and I do understand from Wizard's standpoint, if you have the ability to get some extra money now and stuff's going to be shipping or whatever in Japan, China, whatever, then take care of it and just do it. It's not everybody's preferred option, but it makes logical business sense.
Yeah, because we're in uncharted territory here.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. Like, you're having to make decisions on the fly with minimal information. And the other thing to remember, too, is there are still stores, businesses, whatever there that would like to be able to still sell Magic and do business. So if they have the opportunity to, and Wizards can sell them things, well, it's kind of in everybody's best interest in that area anyway. It also shouldn't have a giant... What's that?
I was going to say, for everybody that's ever asked the question, you know, what purpose do games serve? Be they board games, video games, role-playing games. If you hadn't figured out what the purpose is now, I don't know what to tell you.
Sure, for sure. Yeah, I was going to say, it shouldn't have a big impact here in the U.S. because the majority of the cards that are being released are not going to be in English. Obviously, because they'll be in Chinese, Japanese, Korean, you know. So you shouldn't have a hard time still selling the cards, and the prices of the cards shouldn't be tanked too much. The only interesting thing will be the cards will be released there in paper, plus it'll be online. So kind of what cards do people like or not like, or what's being used or not, will be somewhat discovered already. But we'll see. Again, it's a new experiment. We'll see what happens. Then, of course, we have the FNM at Home that they're doing, which sounds like it went pretty well. I know a lot of people that got online, played their events with the pre-con decks. They connected with local stores. The stores gave them codes. And I saw several people online already using the new sleeve backs or card backs, whatever we're calling them.
Nice.
And that was good. You know, several stores went out of their way to set up stuff either on Facebook or on Discord, got some people to come by. Several stores gave out all their codes, which is awesome. So though that one didn't directly result in a direct financial situation for the stores, it did help them build their social networks and whatnot, which is pretty positive.
Yeah. Just then a fourth thing in which you can reach out and, you know, still, like you said, build your brand, still get basic human interaction on some level.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. When you're in this type of situation, like actually, okay, to take a step back for a second, one of the biggest known understandings in advertising, depending on which research you follow, people have to hear or see something from a brand to interact with it. At least, the numbers vary anywhere between 9 to 11 times. Which is why you see all those commercials on TV all the time, right? You see a thing for Lowe's like every other commercial break when you're watching a show. But the idea is it keeps it top of mind. So eventually, when I need a thing, I go to Lowe's and not Home Depot, right? Well, in this type of situation, that's largely what Wizards is helping the stores do. Like, give you more locals getting in contact with you. So they see you, they're looking up your information online, they go to your Facebook or they go to your Discord or whatever, they're sending you a message, they get on your mailing list, you can send them a thing when the next stuff's happening, when you reopen. So eventually it's like, hey, maybe I should check this store out. Or, hey, I remember when things sucked and I was stuck at home. Maybe I should give these people some business, you know, that sort of thing. So for those that can survive this, you know, when we come out of it, hopefully they'll have a better network of local players. And then the last thing that came up today, they may have posted this yesterday, but what they did is they're working with D&D Beyond. For those of you that don't know what that is, D&D Beyond is an app for Dungeons and Dragons. Sometimes there's adventure stuff. It has like a character maker and some other stuff in it. What they're doing is they're producing codes that will be sent to stores. So when the next book comes out, anybody who purchases the physical book will get a code to get them 50% off of the book on the D&D Beyond app. So you get a physical book, then you get a discount code if you want to have it in D&D Beyond as well and be able to have both copies. So that's a pretty cool bonus for stores too, because it's encouraging people to go see your retailer, buy a D&D book, and then if you use the app, it's like, cool, now you get an even cheaper thing online to have that as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, we were talking about, you know, I was talking to some friends last night just about getting a D&D thing together, maybe even online, just to, I mean, not even playing the game, just talking about setting up how we would play the game. We killed an hour and a half.
Yeah. I mean, it's great.
The games do for you.
Yeah. When this, you're in this type of situation, it's a great way to spend time, you know? So yeah, there's just some different ways that Wizards is making some efforts trying to help stores out. I mean, now granted, each of these will have different varying effects and different levels for each store on their effectiveness or what long-term money they're able to generate for them. But these are all ways to at least encourage people to keep interacting with the stores, come back to the stores, help them make sales, you know, with all the stuff going on. Because for as much as people want Wizards to do more, I mean, they're doing it quite a bit right now. I mean, they're literally just producing product to give away. You know, they're working with these companies to get codes to give to people. So they'll come in and buy something. You know, they're moving dates around, which the Wizards is going to lose money not doing full pre-release weekends and then regular release weekends. Like, now they're basically the same weekend. But I mean, nobody has a choice in this scenario, so they're just doing the next best thing they can for everybody.
Yeah. And we're seeing a lot of the companies, you know, that are bigger companies that are able to take a bit of a loss doing things like this. Ubisoft, for example, is they got a deal where if you own a copy of Ghost Recon Breakpoint, your friend can play it with you, and they don't have to own a copy of the game.
Oh, that's cool. I wonder how they figure that out. That's kind of neat.
I think there's like, I think PlayStation and Xbox both have some stuff to kind of allow you to do that, provided the publisher is okay with it. I know PS4 share has been a thing for a while, so I think this is probably just, they're taking the limits off of some technology that probably already exists.
Okay, that's cool. It's neat to see everybody kind of innovating right now, so who knows what the future of gaming looks like, because we're all figuring out new things right now. But yeah, so let's talk about some other stuff. We talked about the Channel Fireball Magic Fest online, and that's actually gone pretty well. Now, the crazy thing is, because again, they're starting events at 3 a.m., 9 a.m., 3 p.m., 9 p.m. So every 6 hours, there's an event. Regardless where you are, you can play two or three of those every day if you want to. And we talked about that last show, so I'm not going to get into the details too much. But what's wild is they've actually been going out, finding different pro players, finding content creators, streamers to do coverage. So they have 24/7 coverage of these events running all day.
That's incredible.
Yeah, you can go by their Twitch page, twitch.tv/channelfireball, and there's coverage all day. If you want to see competitive standard Magic being played, there are tournaments all day. I mean, it's pretty wild. Now, and I will say, yeah, the quality of the commentary varies greatly because you have people that haven't worked together before. You have people with different setups. I mean, for the most part, it's been pretty good, to be honest. But, I mean, you also have people who are, they're kind of looking for a distraction themselves.
Yep.
And they've been cooped up. So not everybody's in the best headspace, but they're all looking to at least contribute and be involved.
And even, you know, you see at the pro level, they can't figure out a commentary team for Monday Night Football, and they have millions of dollars to throw at the problem. It's not an easy thing. The people that are good at it make it look really easy. I promise you, it's not easy, as you can see when people don't click.
That's true. So the event, we had all of our daily events. That we had our first weekly event happen last week. Mark Jacobson won with a Sultai Escape deck, which is blue, black, green, playing pretty much a bunch of ramp spells, big stuff, try to kill things with Casualties of War, playing things like Uro and Polokranos to get stuff out of the graveyard back into play. Been seeing a lot of this deck on Arena, so I think some people almost went directly to this list and copied it and started playing it. So it's kind of interesting.
Some of my favorites in any game are the ones, you know, that play with the graveyard, because it's almost like having a second hand.
In a way, that's kind of the advantage of this deck, is you kind of play two or three of your big things. If the opponent deals with them, well, now you have a chance to like get them back out of the yard, and they're just as good or better than they were before. But yeah, I will say the top eight, if you look through it, actually was a pretty good spread of decks. Yeah, that deck, there was Teemer Reclamation, which people thought that deck was dead, but it's still around. Bant Midrange, there was a couple of those. The Rakdos Sacrifice deck, there was a couple of those. There was a four-color control deck, which basically just played a lot of Planeswalkers.
Nice.
Yeah, but it's a little bit of everything, and it was cool because every color is getting played. If there was any gripe, maybe that none of the true aggro decks did well last week. Not to say, I mean, that may change week to week because you're going to have completely different people qualifying all the time with 24 hours of events. But who knows? I mean, but overall, pretty good format, pretty good balance. I think you're going to keep seeing a lot of iteration because people are playing a lot competitively right now online. So it's pretty neat. It's cool to see that this actually worked. I mean, I don't know who's responsible at either Wizards or Channel Fireball for working out these details and putting it all together. Or maybe it's just a combination of both groups. But it's cool that in the matter of, I mean, I would assume this was over the course of about 2 weeks that all this stuff really got planned and started getting put in motion. And we were immediately playing tournaments, and here we are. So it's pretty cool under the circumstances and under the pressure that something like this was able to come together. I mean, I don't really know of too many other times I could think of where there was like major situation and then something of this level had to be scrambled and put together, at least in the gaming community. I mean, it may have happened elsewhere, but I don't know. Moving on from that, though, kind of want to talk a little bit more about that FNM at home thing.
Okay.
Because that went pretty well, all things considered. Like I said, a lot of stores gave away all their codes. Players were excited to get on and play with the decks. And overall, I think that was about as good as it could have been. And it was cool because it was all day Friday. So you literally could just, your time zone didn't really matter. It's just when you woke up and it was Friday, go play. You know, it wasn't time locked except for the 24 hours of Friday, wherever you are. So that was pretty cool. But this week is the exciting one for you.
Yes.
So I take it you're going to play this Friday?
I'm pretty excited about it. We're going to have to work. We're going to work out a rotation because, you know, wife, three kids. I've got a million electronic devices in this house, and yet somehow they're all in use at the same time. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't play last week. I think I was busy working on some stuff, and then I decided I was going to stream something. But this week I might. I don't know. I think this week is the sleeve that has the Ajani on the back too, which is kind of cool. So,
and I
don't know if you're thinking about doing something and you're stuck at home and you don't have anything to do on a Friday, and you normally would do FNM, even if you don't like playing standard or whatever, like this is the time where you could just build whatever. You could literally go to any of these sites, say like Aetherhub, look through deck lists people are posting, just download the list or export it, import it into Arena, and boom, go play. You don't even have to worry about the cards being in your collection.
That's why I love this, because as somebody, you know, that is not with a huge collection, and you know, that is one of the things that holds me back, is hey, resources and time to get the resources. I got every card in the game right now that's legal. So hey, yeah,
I've literally considered doing a stream on Friday and just making that the day where I'm just gonna open it up and let my streamers just be like, hey, you have a sweet deck, have a crazy deck, send it to me. Nothing's at risk, so just send it to me and I'll put it in there and I'll play it for 3 matches. All right, cool. Send me another list. I'll play the next list for 3 matches. You know, why not? Could be a lot of fun.
Definitely.
And you don't have to worry about losing wild cards or anything like that. Like, it's just play what you wanna. And then, since we kind of mentioned it earlier, Ikoria is still coming. Though now, instead of being, I guess what'll be in 2 weeks, it'll be 6 weeks. But they are still going to do the streamer early access thing. So for those of you that don't know, people who are part of their Wizards content creator program, I think they just call it the Wizard Magic Creator Program. They send out invites and invite you to participate in the streamer early access. So basically on the, I believe it's the Wednesday before the set goes live online, the streamers get on and for 24 hours, they're all playing different decks or whatever. They get access to the cards. And then on Thursday, it goes live online. And then Friday, it goes on sale in stores. Well, this time it is a little bit different. They're doing it through Streamlabs. And for those of you who don't know this, right now, the creator program goes through Streamlabs if you're in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., you have to reach out to your local coordinators and stuff. But you have to sign up through Streamlabs. Make sure you get to be part of the streamer program or creator program first. Then, if you are, there's a thing you can sign up for to be part of the streamer early access event. Now, I don't know if there's still time for people or not. I know I was already in the creator program, so I hit the thing. I got an email confirming that I did what I needed to. They'll reach back out to me. But if you're a content creator for anything in Magic, go sign up in the Streamlabs thing. Maybe you'll get approved fast enough, and then you can just sign up to be in the early access event. I had a good time with it. My regulars from my stream came on and got to see me play with different cards, and they were curious about things, and that was fun. I just did Constructed. I know some people get on and they like to try to do sealed stuff or whatever with it, but I just think it's more fun to just go, oh, here's a sweet card. Let's see if we can use it and build something with it. So it's cool that that's going on. It'll be another thing that everybody can watch and have available. I believe it's in 2 weeks that we're going to be doing that. So keep an eye out for that as well. So tons of stuff happening. If you want to play Magic at home, if you want to watch Magic content at home, there is a lot of stuff available to us right now. Oh, and that's not to mention, MTG Melee is still running a lot of events over there. So there's several events that are open that you can join. There's some that are private. Some of them are private, and you just have to like be a follower on their Twitch channel or whatever. So if you just want to play more events, cheap or free in a lot of cases, go check those out, because a lot of them are still giving prizes. So, yeah, again, just tons and tons and tons of opportunity while you're at home if you do want to play some Magic. Speaking of, are you getting more Magic play in right now, dude?
Actually, no, because of everybody. The computer is in constant use. Almost whatever time of the day you want to... Whatever time of the day I like to get at there, because we all have, at this point, different sleep cycles, and we've gone to them since there's, for the most part... Other than my wife, who works directly from home in an office, both of us don't have a certain time we have to be anywhere right now. So it's crazy.
So what you're telling me is we need all of our listeners to go back our Patreon so we can buy you another computer.
Yeah, sure. That's what I I guess that's what I said. Yeah. Nice translation. I didn't know I was saying that. Good job.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, if you'd like to support the channel, we do have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/colorofmagic. So if you want to hit us up over there, please do so. We could definitely use it right now, so that would not be a bad thing.
I could also stream magic, because this machine is not trying to do that.
I feel you. So one of the segments we brought up last week that we thought we might follow while we're in this isolated state right now is having Brian ask an interesting magic question and seeing if I know the answer or can find the answer to it.
I love that sound effect. It makes me instantly 12 years old watching Saved by the Bell again.
So, what's your question this week, Brian?
All right, what would you say is the rarest card, or I guess the most unique card in Magic? I don't know those are the same thing. There might be two questions in one.
That actually really is a good question, because there's, well, I guess depending on how you look at it, there's technically two that would be in that category. Now, contrary to popular belief, I will say there's some lore, I guess, around some cards with Richard Garfield, the creator of Magic. He actually, for different major points in his life, he made some custom Magic cards, had them printed and everything that he gave away. So he has a couple he made to, I guess, remember his marriage. So I think it's a card is actually called The Proposal. And then he has two, I believe, for each of his children. One is like something Genesis, and I don't remember what the other one was. But the way I also understand it is he made multiple copies to give those to different people as well. So several employees at Wizards or whatever at the time got those. So those are very rare, but there is some number of those in existence. But there are two different cards that, as far as I know, only one of each exists.
Oh, wow.
One of them is the 1996 World Championship card, or maybe it's just called the 1996 World Champion, I think. And obviously, 1996 World Champion, that went to the winner of the World Championships that year. And I think that was the first World Championship. And it's the last one I heard a story recently that the trophy was recently sold or given to somebody as recently as like 4 years ago. But the card itself has been sold to a private collector. I believe it's exchanged hands three times, at least, you know, through the grapevine. That's the story. But the only thing that's noted on record is that it sold for like 18 grand back in 01. But by now, if it sold for a second or third time, like the stories say, it probably is in the, I mean, it's going to be more than the Lotus. So, wow. I mean, it's probably 100 grand or so by now, at least. So that's the first one.
Yeah.
The other has a more interesting story. And man, I have to look this up so I can actually pronounce the name correctly, because I'll always get it wrong. Give me a quick second here. It's got a crazy spelling, but it's called the Shishi Fukujin Dragon. It was a card. Well, I guess it was a painting turned into a card or some such, but either way, it was made for the Japanese Tournament Center in Tokyo. I guess Wizards owned a building there years ago. This is a long time ago. This is like in, God, like late 90s, maybe like 98, 99. And for some reason, I don't know why, but all the stories I've ever heard is that all of the copies were destroyed but one for some reason. So I don't know if this is true, but everybody I've spoken to that's into rare magic stuff believes this is all accurate. So I'm just going to stick with that till I'm told otherwise.
There you go.
But I guess at some point they got rid of the tournament center, but the company that was in charge of that promotion and everything still kept the artwork and the card together. So they still exist in Japan in some office. But to my knowledge, there's only one of it in existence, and it's on a wall somewhere in Japan right now. So I have no idea what that would sell for. I'd imagine with the rarities groups I've seen, that will buy odd misprints for $1 billion. Like, this thing has to be... I'd be surprised if it would sell for less than 50K. And if it sold realistically for less than 75K, it'd probably be because a lot of people don't even know it exists. So, I don't know. Now, what's cool is they did make some stuff for it, because I remember having a deck box with the artwork on it, some other things. So they did market it a bit, but the actual card, I've never physically seen one in person. I just know it exists.
And if Daquan hadn't seen it, folks, it's rare.
I mean, I've seen some pretty crazy rare stuff, but I know some people that are even deeper into the rarities than I am by a long shot. So there is a lot of odd, rare magic things out there. But one of the things, too, while I'm on the topic, I want to tell people is that the reason some stuff sells for more or less sometimes just has to do with how many people even know it exists. You know, because one of the interesting things is I do remember when I was at Wizards, somebody, because, you know, Wizards gives employees different things all the time. And somebody asked me, well, what do you think this is worth? And I was like, well, there's no value on it right now. And somebody's like, oh, it sucks that it's worthless or whatever. I said, no, I didn't say it's worthless. I just said there's no value on it right now. Like, those are different things. Because some stuff that's only, say, you know, I literally own some things that were maybe only given to like 15 or 20 employees, right? I don't know what that will sell for. But that's because nobody even knows it's a thing yet. It's like, I think I've told you about one of the items. It's literally just hanging in my closet. Like, to my knowledge, other than the people I've told about it, maybe 100 other people even know it exists.
Until now.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I've had a friend ask me, like, oh, dude, what do you think that's worth? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, somebody might pay $5,000 for it. Somebody might pay $80,000 for it. But right now, nobody knows it exists. You know, so, and I think that's why when you see stuff that comes on the market, collectibles, I don't know what the actual word would be for that phrase. Anyway, when you see collectibles come on the market, there's sometimes
future, what do we learn? What's the correct word?
Yeah, exactly. I'll do that for next week. No, but you'll see that they do like usually a couple of weeks of promotion for that item. So they can create awareness, run like a news story, put stuff up on a website, let collectors groups find it, whatever. And then, like, Sotheby's puts it up on a big expensive auction or whatever. Rarely does a thing just come out of somebody's home or private collection and go straight to auction. It's usually some type of prep time, partly so the true collectors can also verify the provenance, figure out what it actually is, what's the likelihood that this is legit and not some made-up thing, you know, and then they can bring their top dollar value. So, yeah, stuff like these things, who knows? Like, for the average person to even see one or even know what it is if they saw it would be a surprise. I mean, I think if I put these two cards in my binder in front of Magic players, they would probably just assume there's some weird promos or something that were given to Wizards employees or whatever, and they wouldn't even know what they were, you know? But anyway, yeah, that's the long answer to... As far as I know, those are the two. There are other things that are rare. Like I said, things that I own that are rare, that other people, Wizards that I don't own, are rare. There's misprints that there's five or less in the world of some of them. You know, there's test sheets of certain things that there's only a couple in the world, or in some cases, even one of in the world. I don't necessarily count those, though, because those are kind of like true oddities. More than a thing that was actually purposely produced to be unique, if that makes sense.
Okay.
But not to say those things don't still sell for crazy amounts of money.
As I've learned,
yeah,
those things are worth pretty much what someone is willing to pay. And that varies wildly sometimes.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, believe me, it's the same. You know, when people look around and say like, oh, well, this isn't, you know, like I might look at like a, I don't know, a Coach purse or a Armani suit or something. I'm like, who pays 20 grand for that? Right. But there's other people who are like, hell yeah, that's a deal for that suit.
Yeah.
You know, like, so if somebody can sell the suit for 20 grand, great. I'm going to go get my like $150 Men's Warehouse suit or whatever, and I'll be all right. But yeah, it's definitely down to whatever somebody's willing to pay for it. So yeah, that's your story. So hopefully I got to educate some people, and I don't know, everybody, let us know what you think about these. If you like these kind of deep dive story time, well, not story time, we're doing that next,
yep.
But just like question answer sort of things that we can kind of fill in gaps, or I don't know, just educate people in general. Let us know. If that's a cool segment, we'll keep it. If not, we'll toss it into the fire and burn it for warmth later. But moving on to our next segment that we tried out last week. That was pretty fun. So let's go with that again, because I had a good time with it. Let's have some story time.
Nobody's told us yet not to do it, so we're going to keep on doing it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. If y'all hate this, just let us know. Like, we're trying to have some fun and make the most of our situation right now. So, Brian, what is your magic or tournament event story for this week?
All right. This is another one of those small comic shop in Dallas area. Like, is this tournament going to happen? Where one of my friends is a Marine. This is, you know, we have people from all walks of life that play this game, as I tell people all the time. He's like, literally, he is on the way from, you know, I guess, exercises or whatever to get here, make sure we got enough people to run this tournament. And he makes it like right as the deadline hits. He busts through the door. He is literally, you know, walking through the comic shop toward the bathroom, changing out of his uniform into his regular clothes like Superman. And people are just, you know, there's a couple of people who don't regularly play here looking like, what in the world is happening right now? And I just stop and look at them. We take our magic very seriously around here. Everybody just... Because it really looked like he was changing into his civilian identity, which, yes, technically he was to an extent. But it was just a great moment.
Dude, what's sad is I've seen that play out with people of different jobs more than once. But, you know, it just goes to show that people are trying to prioritize magic. You know, they're trying to get done with their day job and then, boom, get over and have some fun and enjoy their downtime. But it's all on a schedule.
By day, I'm an accountant. By night, I'm a wizard.
Yeah, basically.
I wish I taped it. It could have been a great commercial or video or something.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. There's something there if they wanted to dive into something like that down the road. Okay, so I want to share a story. This one's a little more about like the nuts and bolts behind the scenes of a magic event. I guess. Very different than my story from last week. But there were this, and I'm not going to name any names, so I'm not causing it for us. People who participated or were at any of these will know exactly who I'm talking about, but I will not use names to protect the innocent. But there was an event that was going to be run at the Fort Worth Convention Center. And for those of you who don't know, Fort Worth Convention Center, the Will Rogers Center, other venues in Fort Worth or Arlington get used pretty regularly in the Dallas-Fort Worth area because the Dallas Convention Center is significantly more expensive and somewhat less easy to get to, I guess, because of where it's situated and the parking and all that. But anyway, this event was going to go down in Fort Worth, and I only preface it with that because me and another gentleman from Texas named Jim Schumann, we ran a lot of events at that particular venue, knew the staff there very well, you know. So, but somebody else was running this particular tournament. Jim was going to judge it. I was going to participate in it. And we get there. There's no signage. There's no details for what room at this venue it's in. So at some point we have like, I don't know, like 60 or 70 magic players just standing around, right? Okay. Starting to gather because it's getting close to registration, whatever. Then like registration time, we're about halfway through. More people are showing up because you want to get there before start time, obviously. And at that point, I just pull Jim aside get to my phone and I'm just like, hey, why don't we just call these folks that work here? And I'll just tell them like, hey, if you can get us a room, we'll just pay for it. The person running the event can pay us back or whatever. And like, we can get it all figured out. Cause you know, I figured last second, they'll probably give me a deal on a room. Cause we were running events at that venue, probably like at one point it might've been 7 times, 8 times a year. Right. So we tried, and the person, one of the people who has to sign off on those ultimately was not present. So we're like, well, look, there's people here want to do a thing, you know, and we tried back and forth trying to get a hold of the person. We just couldn't. So at this point, we're already like 15, 20 minutes after the posted start time for this event. So we end up calling around to other stores in the DFW area that don't have anything major going on or can give up space. So we find a store on the opposite side of Dallas in Garland.
Oh my God.
Now, you know, from being there, yeah. Fort Worth to Garland is for real like 45 minutes, right?
Absolutely. Like, that's assuming you catch all the lights and nothing bad has happened on the highway.
Yeah. So like, this is a real trek, but we're like, this is the place that can do it. So instead of having like a 10 o'clock start time, I think because it's already like 10:30 or something at this point. So we get with them and decide we're still going to run the event. We have judges available. We have players available. So we set it for a noon start time. So all of those players literally all find a way to get from Fort Worth to Garland. Oh, everybody goes all the way across the DFW area. We get to the store. They don't have quite enough seating. So we literally go next door. They had like a Mexican restaurant next door. Either next door or two doors down, but in the same shopping center. So we go talk to them. We're like, hey, would you mind if we use like three of your tables, at least for the next like 3 hours? After that, enough people are dropped that we can put them into the other room or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And they were cool with it, actually, which is great. So we encourage everybody to go buy food from them and everything between rounds. We played this turn. Actually, no, I don't even think that was enough space, actually. We had those three tables, and then I don't remember what. I feel like somebody played in like a truck bed. For like, I swear to God, I'm not making this up. I think we needed like one or two more tables for some reason than what we had available, because we didn't want to use all the tables in the Mexican restaurant and cost them business. But anyway, vent goes off. After three or four rounds, we're able to get everybody back in the store. Credit, because everybody scrambled. Like, we had to put stuff together at the last minute. The funny thing is, there were some players that weren't going to be able to make the 10 o'clock start that actually played the event because we started at noon. So we actually gained players going from one area to the next, because also I think some people were calling friends and stuff and letting them know. So some other people came down.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one of those things where I don't remember. I think the tournament organizer genuinely had intended to purchase space at that convention center. And for whatever reason, just didn't. Like, I don't know if it slipped through the cracks and they forgot about it or whatever. But obviously, they hadn't paid for space. They didn't have somebody there to manage it.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, we still made it happen, though.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we scrambled. We made an event happen. People were super happy. Still gave an invite away, because I think it was a PTQ. And, yeah, it was a crazy time. But that's the type of stuff that happens. Like, you got to find a way to make stuff happen sometimes on short notice. And it's another thing too, where keeping connections with people helped, because yep. We were able to go into our phones, start messaging or calling people and being like, hey, here's the situation, blah, blah, blah. What do we got to do? You know, and the stores gave up space that they didn't have to, you know, put pressure on their staff. Granted, they sold a lot of cards. They sold a lot of snacks, you know, so they made money off of it, obviously, and it's fine. But yeah, just that's why I tell people it's just not worth it to burn bridges, because scenarios like that happen where you need as many people as possible available to help you pull off something. And me and Jim got to look like heroes helping everybody out. So
another suntan Superman moment for Daquan, folks.
Hey, I try, man. I try. But yeah. That's it. So why don't we tell everybody how they can find you on social, friend?
All right, I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and our family-related channel is Alan's Ever After.
And as usual, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragon. You can find me on most social sites these days, but I am very active over on YouTube right now as I'm putting up content, if not every day, at the very least every other day. I might skip one every once in a while I'm at home right now. And you can find me streaming on Twitch for sure right now, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time. Though you're catching me more often since, you know, at night I can get bored and I just go streaming. But yeah, the only thing I want to remind everybody one more time is that if you are able to support your content creators, whether that's people writing articles, putting YouTube videos up, making podcasts, whether they're streaming, please do so. Even if it's just sharing their stuff with other people, sharing links to their sites, getting people to sign up or subscribe to their YouTube pages, whatever, because every little bit there helps them. So I get it. Some people are going to be tight for cash because of job situations, but there's a lot of free things you can do that can totally help support all of these different content creators, because there's a lot of people who have conventions that have tournaments or whatever that they were going to be working and either making videos or content or getting paid just to be there that they're not going to be for the next probably month or two, if not three. So every little bit helps them out, especially if you're on Twitch and you have an Amazon Prime account. Whether you know it or not, if you have Amazon Prime, you automatically get a free Twitch subscription to give away every single month. That's a $5 value. You just have to go sign up on Twitch. You can give $5 to any of your favorite content creators over there. So if you have Amazon Prime, that's another free way you can go help somebody out every single month. So just want to throw that out there. Lots of ways to help your content creators right now, and several of them are low cost. So please, please, please do so. But otherwise, I think that's where we're going to wrap it up. We were going to have a guest this week, but he had some issues. So we're going to try to reconnect. We had some crisscross wires, so we're going to try to connect next week. But I think everybody will really enjoy it. So we will get back on track with that. And otherwise, that's it. So wherever you are listening from, whenever you're listening, just want to say good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And take care of yourself. Keep your hands clean. Stay healthy. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.